Hello and welcome to the Canine Conservationist Podcast, where we're positively obsessed with conservation detection dogs. Join us every week to discuss ecology, odor dynamics, dog behavior, and everything in between. I'm your host, Kayla Fratt, and I am a co-founder of Canine Conservationists, where we train dogs to detect data for researchers, agencies, and NGOs. I am still sick, so I do apologize for my voice, but you're going to enjoy this episode anyway, so do stick around. We are talking today with Rachel Hamry about how she ended up in the conservation detection dog world, the work that we're doing together with Canine Conservationists, and just kind of a general get to know you for one of the other two people that is heavily involved in Canine Conservationists, since I know our podcast listeners know me relatively well at this point. So welcome to the podcast, Rachel.
Hey, thank you.
So Rachel, I tasked you with doing our science highlight for the week. So why don't you start us off with the science highlight you've picked out?
Yeah, so I found one called Why Sniff Fast? The Relationship Between Sniff Frequency, Odor Discrimination, and Receptor Neuron Activation in the Rat. So this was on rats, not dogs, but related to sniffing and scent detection.
And it looks like it was published in 2009 in the Journal of Neurophysiology.
Yes. So I'm just going to read the discussion from part of this. It was a pretty interesting study. So the discussion says, in general, this study fails to support the idea that the specialized high-frequency sniffing behavior typically seen during odor discrimination tasks influences odor coding or enhances low-level information processing. What, then, is the functional role of rapid sniffing during odor discriminations? Our data suggests that the primary consequence of rapid sniffing is to expedite odor delivery to ORNs. Thus, rapid sniffing is an indicator of an animal's search for the stimulus rather than its need to enhance information processing.
Interesting. Okay, so basically, yeah, this was an interesting one. I haven't read the paper. So basically, what you're saying is that when they're doing this really like fast sniffing, this like, that wasn't necessarily correlated with difficulty, but more with how motivated they were.
If you have done like any scent work with your dog, you've probably noticed them do some, yeah, like rapid sniffing, like a type of thing that is pretty specific to scent tasks. So this is another excerpt. It says, we found that sniffing strategies remained unchanged even as task difficulty was increased to the point of discrimination failure, indicating that rats do not alter sniffing strategy to improve performance and implying that sniffing strategy does not substantially alter discriminability or detection threshold.
The one thing that like stuck out to me a little bit when you sent it over to me was that these rats were in kind of, they were in like a head cage, holding their heads still, which I assume was basically to ensure that they could actually get really good footage and count these sniffs and like code the video.
It was also, they also measure like the pressure that the rat puts when it moves its head a certain direction. And they can also use those head fixing machines to like weigh how much weight the rat is putting on their front feet. And they also did something intranasally that they could measure the sniff rate.
Whoa. And these are the sorts of studies that, yeah, this is in rats because we would not really do this to dogs. Sorry, rats, that you get stuck with this one. Yeah, so this was pretty much a discrimination test, though. They weren't really doing detection, right?
Yes, that's true. It looked relatively complicated, but they would vary the concentrations of the odor by like mixing the target odor in a higher or lower ratio with other
things.
I guess non-target odors.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because one of the things that like kind of came up to me when I was also reading this and realizing that it was pretty focused on discrimination is I wonder if the rapid sniffing is more important for detection or like following a gradient of like an odor cone or something. And I know in the Osterkamp book that I just read, Detection Dogs and Scent Movements, they kind of hypothesized that one of the things that rapid sniffing may help with is also kind of disturbing odor molecules and volatilizing them, especially in like dry or dusty environments. So I'd be really curious to maybe even use the like we can do this some other time, but kind of go back and look at like what other papers have cited this paper and like what is kind of built on this for detection instead of discrimination. Cool. Yeah, I might actually have to dig up this paper and read it. It sounds pretty technical, but pretty cool. Okay, so Rachel, why don't you start off telling us, why don't we like kind of go back? Like, what were you like as a kid? And how does that, you know, through the context of knowing now you're in this conservation detection dog world, were you like always into dogs? Were you always into conservation? Where did you kind of grow up and how has that influenced where you are now?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I was always pretty into animals and behavior. I remember having a little feather cat toy and using it to like play with my cat and give him treats when he would, you know, do cool flips in the air to catch the feather toy. And in reality, I was teaching him nothing. But in my head, I was having a great time teaching him how to do flips.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, cool.
And yeah, I was kind of always trying to bring home random animals. I had some pet crawdads, a pet pig. He was super smart and really fun to train. And I kind of got into, or like more officially into the behavior side of things and like actually understanding animal behavior when I adopted a dog when I was 12. And she was really scared of people, pretty scared of everything. And so I kind of just found myself as a 12-year-old going to a lot of training classes, actually at the same place where Kayla and I...
We have like a mutual training mentor. We were not there at the same time, but Miguel Gonzalez at All Reed Rescue and Training in Colorado Springs has worked with both of us. Yeah. Me when I was like 21 and Rachel when you were like...
When I was like 12, 13. Yeah.
So big old shout out to Miguel.
Yeah, I got into dog training that way and kind of just realized that I was really into it and have continued to get more and more passionate about dog training since then. The conservation side of things, I sort of fell into. My granddad was really into biology and stuff like that, and so I think I got some interest in just like living things and ecology and stuff like that from him. And then in college, I was a biology major, and my first job out of college was working with fish and game, looking at a rare plant, and I was kind of just entrenched in the conservation and botany and environmental world from there on.
Yeah, and you've had a bunch of really interesting seasonal field positions throughout that time. Were there any like classes or professors or anything that had a big impact in you while you were in undergrad?
Yeah, one of my favorite professors, Dr. Mansfield, was the head of the herbarium in my school, and so I got a job working in the herbarium, and that was probably the start of my plant and botany career, which makes sense. And I kind of hadn't really planned on falling into plants, but that was like a job that was available to me, and I got one job in that, and the resume continued from there.
It is funny how that happened. I remember panicking right after college when I got a job as the communications and outreach intern for Conservation Colorado. And I applied for a job as a behaviorist at the Denver Animal Shelter. And they rejected me for the job and suggested I apply to be their communications intern instead. And I had this like panic attack where I was like, no, I want to work with the dogs and do the stuff. I don't want to just run social media. And luckily I was then hired by Denver Dumb Friends League, which is another shelter in the Denver area, and kind of was able to like wrench my resume out of going that direction. But it's funny how it will sometimes build on itself like that.
Yeah. Just find yourself there, and
yeah,
I've ended up here, which I'm super happy about.
Yeah, I mean, in retrospect, there's a lot of really good things I learned in that Conservation Colorado job that I'm really glad I had. I just really didn't want to accidentally end up in this position where I was like a professional media manager for the rest of my life, even though that kind of is what I am.
Very good at Instagram.
Yeah. Well, medium good. So, okay. So you had the job doing the rare plant stuff, and this was in Idaho, right?
Yes.
Yeah. What have been some of your other like field positions since then?
I have done some stream surveys, identifying plants along riverbeds, basically. I worked on a sage-grouse conservation project, also doing a lot of plants. I have done some trail crew. I guess that's not really plant-related. It's a lot of my... Yeah, I think most of my summers have been filled with various plant projects that relate to other conservation tangentially.
Yeah, so it sounds like the first time Canine Conservationist gets a weed project, if it's only a one dog, one handler thing we're sending you.
Sure, yeah, that sounds great.
Great, yeah. I know, when I was doing the Dyer's Wood project back when I was at WD4C, I am not a huge plant person. And I was like having to text Dr. Niall Richards every like 20 minutes, and it's like 5 a.m. It's barely light out because that was when it was cool enough to work. I was texting her pictures of like every third rosette I saw, being like, this isn't it, is it? And it never was.
You just have to tell by the way it is.
Yeah, exactly. It works with ash trees. I don't know if it works with anything else. Yeah, so then, you know, also after college, because so you don't have the stock that you got when you were 12 anymore. I suppose she would be like 18 now. Not quite that old, but what has been kind of your dog journey since that one kind of liftoff dog in Colorado Springs?
Yeah, I got really into dog training with her when I was 12. Kind of, she died when I was in college, and then I kind of had a gap where it didn't make sense for me to have a dog of my own, but I felt like I had learned a lot of dog training stuff, and so I'd, you know, friends would sometimes ask me things, and I'd like give them little like tidbits of advice. And then one of my college friends adopted a dog, but she wasn't allowed to have dogs in her place, but I was allowed in mine, and so I kind of had him with me for a while, and he was super fun, super smart. And then another gap of not really having dogs in my life, traveling, working outside too much, stuff like that. But then I ended up in a place where I could foster dogs kind of seasonally. And so at this point, I think I've fostered something like 22 dogs. And so that's kind of just holding on to whatever dogs need a place to live until they find their permanent home. And my favorite part about that was definitely finding either the things that they really needed to work on or just teaching them fun little tricks that were cute that would get people's attention and make them want to adopt them. So I had one dog who had a litter of puppies under my kitchen table that we're sitting at right now.
Yeah.
Kayla got to see them within the first couple hours.
I was there while Mama right, was in yeah. labor, but I didn't actually, I only had like 45 minutes, so I missed any puppies actually coming out.
That's right. I've forgotten about that. Yeah. So that was a really fun one. Worked on some, I ended up with a lot of dogs who just had a lot of energy and really needed somebody who could exercise them and also just mentally stimulate and enrich them. Those were probably some of the most rewarding, most fun.
No. And fostering is such a cool way really at any stage in your training journey, but like you learn so much. And then as far as scent work goes, did you do scent work with any of your dogs before you got hired with West, or how did your scent work journey go? And what, or yeah, let's start there.
When I was like 14, I had taken like a scent work class with that same fearful dog, and that was super fun. I honestly probably didn't remember a whole lot from it since I was pretty young. I remembered it being fun, and then I didn't really have a whole lot of scent work experience since then. I had gotten interested in a different organization who also used detection dogs, and so I like kind of started teaching myself about it and stuff like that, and then met Kayla and really started learning a lot about it from her and Barley, and then had Barley, and then trained my own dog on it. And yeah. So it's been a lot of learning just in the last couple years or so.
Yeah, I think you kind of, like, you and me and Heather, we all kind of epitomize, like, this pretty typical, like, early entry into this field sort of person where we have this background in conservation or zoology or biology or ecology or whatever it is, and we have some dog experience, and then it's just this kind of, like, slow melding of figuring out how to mush those worlds together, and then all the other additional highly specialized learning that needs to come from that, because there's a lot you can know about conservation and a lot you can know about dog training and then still have these big gaps as far as the conservation detection dog side of things goes. So yeah, why don't you, gosh, this is funny. It almost feels like we're like at a wedding being like, so tell us how you met. but like, so we met on Bumble BFF. so we were not trying to date each other. We were looking for friends in Missoula and met kind of mid-pandemic. Like it was like late 2020, right?
Something like that. I vaguely remember, I think not that long after I had first moved to Missoula, we matched. And I remember being like, oh, we, like, this is, like, the one person on here that I really need to hang out with. And I don't know what happened.
I don't know either. I remember the same thing because you had a really cool picture of you with a, you had a bird on your glove. Yeah. So, like a falconry, whatever. And I think it was Wildlife Rehab, right?
That's, yeah, that's another one I forgot to add in earlier. Yeah. Yeah, I worked with education birds for a while. So birds who were injured and could not be released into the wild. And we would hold them on our glove and give presentations to schools or whatever. Yeah, not related to detection dogs, but
but hey, it's broadly related to conservation, and it's a lot of animal behavior. Yeah. I also have and that stuck out to me as like the photo that I was like, oh my gosh, I need to meet this girl, because I was at the time volunteering at the Wild Skies Raptor Rehab Center here in Missoula, and one of my first jobs in high school, I was working with and training a unreleasable American kestrel, and I've always been kind of into falconry as a concept. But so anyway, so we met on Bumble BFF, and then yeah, tell us about kind of your early stage of like dipping your toes into conservation detection dog work and how that went for you.
Are you talking about like hanging out with you and Barley?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
again, this is like a little bit of a weird interview, but like, because I was there for it. But tell our listeners about how it went.
Yeah, so Kayla and I eventually did end up meeting, luckily.
I think we actually met
just after.
It was like days after I was fired from WD4C.
Yeah.
Maybe the same day. I don't think it couldn't have been. I was an emotional wreck that day.
I think it was days later, because I remember you being like, yeah, like kind of numb about it.
Yeah, because I think when we had first met, I was still working, like when we were like chatting online. Yeah. But anyway. Barley and I were not working at the time, if I remember. And like the first time we met up, we went for a hike. So I had Barley with me.
Yeah.
And I must have not had Niffler yet.
Yeah.
This was pre-Niffler.
You were just starting to... You were still looking. You were looking for another dog, but weren't sure yet.
And yeah.
Okay. So, Kayla offered to let me, just kind of for fun, work with Barley. So she went and set out a cotton swab in the middle of some grass, and yeah, I let Barley search for it, and I was like, "Wow, this is like that was so cool. That was great." Yeah. And then yeah, we just kind of like became really close friends, and then. So weird to think about. Yeah.
Because I think basically, like in our first interactions, it became pretty clear pretty quickly that it was like, okay, we have a ton of overlap of interest in the dog and conservation side, and you were kind of already aware of and interested in conservation detection dogs.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, given that I do this, like, do you want to help me do some training? I feel like that's right. Where it came about, where I was like, help me set some blind hides.
Yeah.
You can be my friend, but also my training assistant.
Yes.
Sorry, that's all my friends. And then I think it kind of spiraled from there. When did you first hear about conservation detection dogs? Do you remember like how you learned that they existed?
I had heard about working dogs for conservation a couple years before that, and I applied for them and like kind of got some interaction, but not a whole lot. And then later, actually, not that, I don't know. At some point I applied for them again, didn't end up getting the position, but I kind of got the response. I made it to like the last round of interviews and I kind of got the response of, we have no constructive criticism for you, we just picked somebody else. Mm. And so that was like very disappointing, but also like, oh, okay, I am qualified for this.
Yeah, you're in the finalist stage.
Yeah.
Which like at that point, I feel like once you're in the finalist stage, it's kind of either luck or yeah, like there's just, it's not that you could have done something better, it's just that there was someone else who was better. Or luckier or whatever.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, so yeah, sad, very disappointing, but also a little bit encouraging in that way. And then you got that job with West, and mm-hmm. they were, I think, really close to the time, like, they were trying to hire somebody, like, very last minute, and you were kind of like, well, I have two dogs, Rachel's taking Barley and going to this other wind farm, and they were kind of like, okay, and I said, great.
yeah, and I honestly, I don't know what I was thinking, and not that I, like, regret the decision, but, like, Niffler was probably 8 months old at the time, 9 months, he was doing really, really well with training. And I had been kind of going back and forth with West about the fact that I was going to probably have two dogs on site with me and that Niffler, I think, would be ready and that he would be totally good. And then when I think Anna, who is the dog coordinator for West, reached out to me kind of saying that they were looking for some very last minute handlers for some openings on a project, it kind of occurred to me that, like, well, I think Niffler's good enough, and Barley really knows what he's doing, and Rachel wants to get into this field. And you were kind of in a stage where, because you were working seasonal jobs and whatever, it wasn't the sort of thing where you were going to have to quit, like, a salaried, amazing dream job that you already really loved in order to take this trial run. So,
yeah, I was in the place of, I was basically preparing to get into the field, but I was also, because of my work, I didn't feel entirely comfortable yet taking the leap of making the commitment of getting my own dog, but I was super lucky to have a great job where I was working from home, and I was able to kind of say, hey, like, I'm leaving in 2 weeks, this is my 2 weeks notice, but can I come back later? And actually, I do plan to work for them again after this coming season. So yeah, I was really lucky to have a super flexible job, one that allowed me mm-hmm. to take that opportunity.
Yeah, and it was, yeah, it worked out really well. You ended up still not, Barley, as we've kind of hinted at on this podcast, I don't know if we've ever told this full story, Barley decided to try to curb stomp a brown recluse and got bitten on the foot relatively early in the field season, right?
It was relatively early, yeah. We had just a regular work day, I think, and everything was all good, and we got home a little bit late, but then the next day woke up and he was limping, and I took him to the vet, and we can only guess that it was a brown recluse bite. We suspect that because of the way that the skin was necrotizing. It was like peeling off. Yeah, that was pretty wild.
Well, yeah, and it was an interesting, and I think this is like not necessarily for the purpose of this conversation, but for listeners just in general, like I feel like how that injury progressed was also a really good reminder of, like, knowing your dog, trusting your dog, trusting your instincts. And because Barley, he was limping, and, you know, initially we were kind of like, maybe he's just got a bruised foot. The vet didn't really find anything at first. It took several days for it to become apparent that something was really wrong, and he didn't just, like, have a sore foot or, like, a bruised paw pad or something. And you and I were in pretty close contact, kind of going back and forth about, like, oh, do we just put a booty on it and let him go to work? And, you know, we were kind of like, actually, he's the sort of dog where if he's limping, he will work for us, but there's something going on that's probably worth stopping work. And I'm really glad we did, because it really did turn out to be a pretty significant injury.
Yeah, it turned, later on, the vet said something about, like, realizing that that was pretty serious, but even they didn't realize how serious it could have been at the start. That was scary. He started limping, and he had had that kind of chronic limp, but it was in his other leg. And so at first I thought, like, oh, he's been compensating, and now this other leg is injured. So I thought it was muscular at first.
Yeah, well, and I totally forgot about that because he had a kind of an iliopsoas strain that was resulting in some like on again, off again limping. He had some physical therapy that like I handed all that off to Rachel, and she knew that that was a factor for him, and that, you know, wind farm work was still acceptable, but he had that going on. So then when he showed up limping on the other side, it totally makes sense to kind of be like, okay, yeah, maybe compensation.
Yeah. Yeah, we were doing, he was getting, what, like laser therapy? I became really great friends with the vet there. Yep. They loved Barley. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, there was like laser therapy. He was walking backwards. He got stretched. Like, okay. Yeah, he was really getting the royal treatment. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Listen, you and your dog are already canine conservationists by listening to the show, so go ahead and show it off. Join the club. Check out our brand new merch store, which is located at canineconservationists.org/shop. It's stocked with stickers and magnets and bags and shirts. We're adding new designs all the time. If you're an artist wanting to collaborate, we split profits and are eager to hear from you. Reach out at canineconservationists@gmail.com. We also offer all of our webinars on demand through our store, so you can check out our puppy raising webinar, alerts and changes of behavior, introducing a target odor, as well as seeking, sourcing, and alerting. We're also planning to add new webinars to this all the time, so if you've got a request for a webinar, or you're a practitioner hoping to contribute a webinar, again, we're going to split our profits with you, and you can reach out to us at canineconservationists@gmail.com. Let's keep the learning going.
Yeah, so then we decided that Barley wasn't going to work anymore, and so I ended up borrowing Anna's dog, Casey. I got a lot of experience working with a lot of different dogs. She was super fun. Totally different, like, working style and everything. Yeah, very disappointing for Barley to not be able to finish his season. I would bring him in the car with us, and he would sit and look out the window, very sad that he wasn't allowed to work. I'd let him out of the car to take a potty break, and I'd have to put him on a leash so that he wouldn't go off and try to work. Yeah, poor Barley. But he's all good now.
And that injury, I mean, it was, I think, I don't know which one of us it was more stressful for, like me not being able to be there with Barley and you being like in charge of someone else's dog and having this happen. But they ended up like drawing lines to show where the redness was. He had a whole boneless, like chicken thigh look going because he was shaved and he lost quite a bit of skin. Like it was.
Yeah. The skin on the bot, like that center paw pad, I'm sure there's a name for it. Yeah. That like main big center paw pad, the whole skin slowly sloughed off and it had to like kind of scab and heal back over into a regular paw pad.
Yeah. Yeah, gosh. So anyway, so that was Rachel's first season.
Oh yeah, and actually it was funny, the vet had also made a comment about like, wow, that foot injury was like the best thing to happen to his iliopsoas because totally fixed everything else.
So. Yeah, he hasn't limped since. He still looks stiff sometimes, but he is 8.5, and he's a live fast, die young sort of guy. Like, he is not easy on his body, so it's not surprising that he sometimes does look a little stiff in the morning still. And we're working on, probably in the next year or two, we're going to be starting to transition him to more of like old man maintenance physical training. I'm really hoping to start getting him into some acupuncture and physical therapy and all that, but that's going to be a whole other podcast that we're going to need to do about helping older dogs ease into retirement and also helping extend their working life when I don't think Barley needs to be retired yet. And he certainly doesn't want to be retired yet, but how we're going to manage moving him towards that and hopefully continuing to have him work for several more years. But okay, so you and I, we met back up in October. You handed Barley back to me after your first season. And then you really started kind of looking for your own dog, right?
Yeah, pretty quickly, pretty early on in that season when I had Barley, I decided that I felt comfortable kind of diving head in, like now that I had these connections and everything, getting my own dog and really committing to the detection dog thing. So yeah, then pretty quickly, I found her in October, I got my border collie, Suki. And yeah, pretty much immediately. I mean, at first we were just doing like searches for little hidden hot dogs, or I'd throw her ball in grass and she'd go sniff it out, and yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and how did you find Suki? Because I know like you had a different image in mind for what you wanted from a dog. And what were some of the like screening things that you were doing as you were looking for Suki, knowing, you know, unlike me with Barley, but kind of, and also unlike, like with Barley, I didn't know I wanted to get into detection dog work. With Niffler, I knew, but I was getting a puppy. Yeah. So what were some of the things that you were looking for, and how did you kind of go about that search?
Yeah, one thing that was really important to me was that I get a dog that if the detection stuff didn't work out with the dog, or if I changed careers or whatever, that I would have a dog that I enjoyed as a pet and that fit into my life nicely, which is pretty funny because I ended up, in my spreadsheet of things that I wanted and didn't want, I really wanted a red or blue heeler. I was kind of leaning more towards red heelers, just for, I think they're pretty.
Aesthetics matter.
Yeah, at least the red heeler side of things. Yeah. And yeah, other, I mean, personality wise, I love heelers. And so I was very set on a heeler, preferentially a red heeler. I have written down specifically that I did not want a black and white dog. And the one issue that I really did not want to deal with was anything dog related. I really wanted a dog who was great with other dogs, and I would have been fine with a dog who, you know, had bitten a kid or any, mm-hmm. like anything like that. I was like, yeah, I could be a great home for that. I just really wanted a dog friendly dog. Yeah. So I was kind of looking around. I was looking on Pet Finder. I was sending lots of emails. I was talking to a lot of people about a lot of different dogs, and I at a nearby shelter, not the nearest one, but one that's maybe like an hour away, there were three dogs that I was like, well, I don't think any of these dogs are quite the right dog, but it's only an hour drive and it's worth going to look at these three dogs. So I drove to look at them, and Suki was actually not one of those three dogs, but I got there, and so I met four dogs, including Suki, and none of those other, I was right, none of the other three were exactly what I wanted, but they showed me Suki, and another of the things that I was really looking for was a dog who was super into playing with toys, as a lot of people look for in detection dogs. And so they brought her out with a tennis ball, and I'd throw the ball and she would lie down and just stare at it. And they said that she had like kind of started to learn how to play fetch, but mostly she'd just lie down and stare at the ball like she wanted to hurt it. And I found all I really knew about her was that she had been born on a nearby farm. So I assume there was some livestock there. I really don't know, but I brought her home, and there were some, it was mostly things about her temperament that I really liked. Like, I ended up having a bunch of people over, not too long after I brought her home, and she did great with having a bunch of people coming in and out of the house. When I took her places, she was really focused on me. A lot of like very basic things that you could work on with a new dog, but I just felt like I had kind of a head start there with her, like some things that she just already kind of had that I wouldn't have to try to work through. And so I did kind of a trial period of, I think, like a week, something like that. And so I decided to adopt her. And so I drove back out to the shelter and filled out the rest of our paperwork, camped. And then the next day we were going on kind of an adoption celebration hike. And as my partner and I were standing there, like, cooking some breakfast and just hanging out with the dogs before we went up the trail, somebody with his two dogs went running up the trail, and she followed them. And at first, I thought she was going to come right back, because that's usually what she did, but she kind of just kept going with them. So eventually, I had to run up the trail about a mile to catch up with her. So anyways, Suki did her adoption celebration hike without me, but that's okay. We both had a great time.
Oh, Suki. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too. Oh, yeah. So I really wanted a dog who was good with other dogs. She ended up having some issues there. We've made a lot of progress on that. And fluoxetine seems to be helping a lot. It's only been a couple weeks, but I think having some medication on board has helped a lot with her grumpiness toward other dogs.
Yeah, thank God for meds.
Yeah.
And yeah, and her issues with other dogs have broadly been pretty specifically like inside of your house.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's pretty specific dogs inside our house. I'm so glad we haven't had any issues with anyone outside the house because we like to do a lot of, you know, off-leash trail running and biking and stuff like that. So that would be a big issue. But yeah, it's mostly been specific dogs inside the house that I can't always tell which dog it's going to be. She picks favorites and less favorites.
Yeah, she does kind of seem to develop these like vendetta is a strong word, but
it's
not the wrong word.
She did not like my mom's dog, and when I went to visit my mom, I would keep Suki in the basement and keep my mom's dog in the upstairs. And if Suki came up and like even heard the other dog's toenails, she would like just, I've never seen murder in her eyes other than that. And she would try to hunt this other dog down. Yeah, super interesting.
Yeah, but she does get along really well with your partner's dog at this point.
Yes.
Which you did have to work through.
There were a couple weeks where, yeah, they couldn't be in the same space. And yeah, so we had to work through that. And I'm so glad it worked.
Yeah, that would be, gosh, yeah, the partner-dog conflicts are, like, back when I did a lot of behavior consulting, that was always the worst, because it was like, they're like, yeah, we want to move in together, we've signed a lease that starts in a month, and it turns out our dogs hate each other, and I'm like, okay, great, yeah, that's super easy, no problem, don't worry about it, I've got it.
You can pay 2 rents, right?
yeah, that's really a solution. We'll just get another house for your dog. But she's always been good with Niffler, right? Because so the other, Rachel had my dogs the entire time I was in Kenya. So Rachel just keeps ending up getting shoved places with Barley. But you were able to kind of manage it with Barley and Niffler, yeah?
Yeah, so Suki never had an issue with Niffler, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, because he's annoying.
Yeah, he's just a goofy, like Niffler could totally get away with things that no other dog would be able to get away with, but Suki has some funny, I guess it falls under resource guarding. She never touches the trash can or even smells it or anything, but if another dog smells the trash can, she enforces the rule of no trash can smelling. And so, of course, she would...
that would be an issue with Barley,
yeah.
As people who listen to the podcast may know. Barley is a consummate trash monster.
Yes. So Suki had pretty minor issues with Barley, luckily. But yeah, Barley just couldn't do anything right at one point, but it was manageable. We put up fences and did lots of treats and engage, disengage, and they can be in the same space. Management is great.
Yeah.
It worked. Everyone was happy enough.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, and she's lovely, and she's going to be starting her first field season with you, gosh, in a couple weeks, a month?
Yeah, we leave very soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a couple weeks. I think she'll be working on her first wind farm project.
Woohoo! Yeah. Oh, gosh. Wow. Yeah, my voice is just not here. I'm so glad we had two podcasts recorded today. I think as we're kind of wrapping up here, what are some of the things that you're, now that we've got you on board with Canine Conservationists, none of us is making any money, we're spending a ton of time doing stuff, what are some of the things that you're like looking forward to growing into, both as like a vision for Canine Conservationists and also for yourself as like within the organization, like where do you want to see yourself in the organization going? What are you excited about?
Yeah, I've started talking to a couple professors about doing a master's in something data related, probably data science. I like the numbers and data side of things, and so I hope that that can contribute to Canine Conservationists at some point. And also kind of provide some financial stability outside of our canine conservationist fieldwork. So kind of, I think that will provide stability and money for myself and canine conservationists in whatever way it works out.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's going to be nice to have someone with that background on the team. And is there anything else that you wanted to bring up or anything I forgot to ask about?
I can't think of anything.
Okay. Yeah, well, Rachel, thanks for being on the podcast, and we're glad to have you part of the Canine Conservationist crew. I think the division of labor that we've got going between you and me and Heather is working out pretty well, but I am hoping to get both of them to come back on the show a little bit more and, just spread it out a little bit. But for everyone listening at home, thanks so much for joining us. Hope you enjoyed getting to know Rachel and Suki and hearing a little bit about their history together. As always, we hope that you're inspired to get outside and be a canine conservationist in whatever way suits your passions and skill set. If you want to learn more about canine conservationists, you can volunteer for us, buy merch, donate, join Patreon, whatever it is that you want. All of that is over at canineconservationists.org. Until next time.